Session number 10699.
Brigadier Reimer Jones, Reel 13. You were telling me about the duty of guarding the only surviving police barracks and how they couldn't go out without escort.
We took it in turn, of course, to cover it the whole time. And I had the misfortune to be sent out there at Christmas to cover it. It was a dazzlingly pretty village. And, of course, it had the Irish, which I'm terribly fond of the Irish, and it was in a way helped in the study of the Irish character. Quite impossible at times, but they are a very fascinating race, as they're getting away from it. So, in my turn, I went out to Lucan, and it was lovely weather. It was Christmas coming, and they seemed to be very pleased to see you everywhere. And, of course, you weren't supposed to go outside. Otherwise, there's no point in the barbed wire. But one day I felt that it deserved some look. It was so quiet there. I thought, I'm going to have a look at this lovely village. And so I walked down the road, and as I was passing one of the little shops, it went back through the shop and up a couple of steps, and there was a room behind. That sounds very Irish, but at any rate, sitting up there at a table with a large loaf in front of him, a mound of Irish butter, was a little man who, seeing me, called out, "Come in, dear." So I went in, and he gave me bread and butter and tea. And we discussed the horrors of this fratricide and how terrible it was. And he got down the book and read me something out of the Bible as well as another goody-goody book. And we both decided that it was terrible that this should be happening. And I left him with thanks and went back to the barracks. And the inspector met me. He was in charge of the police. And said, "Can I have a word with you, sir?" I knew what that meant. Out came the bottle of whiskey, and he filled. You always drank it neat, which I could do in those days. And so you had this large tumbler of neat whiskey. And I said to him, "What a lovely place this is." I said, "I've been down to the village, and who would be that charming little man who we got on so well together?" And he said, "Oh, that's so-and-so. He's a terrible fellow. He's got two sons on the run, and each Saturday he goes into Dublin, gets drunk, and challenges the police to arrest him." So I thought, well, that's Ireland, you see. That's Ireland. Well,
how did you get on with the population generally at this time? Before we go on to talk about the raiding of houses,
we already had in raids here and there. I was put on a raid at that time, where I appeared in one of the Irish papers as a very polite young officer. I don't know whether that pleased me or not.
Could you tell me the story of that? What happened exactly? What were you raiding for?
Information at that time. One of the people I had to raid was a house which belonged to the fellow I went over the top with, Passchendaele, who was Captain Redmond at that time. And he wasn't in, so I had to go through the motions of searching the place, and all I could find was perhaps, I thought, shall I, shan't I, Because there was his uniform in the cupboard. And considering his politics, I felt I got to take it away, otherwise I should get cursed. So, feeling rather sad about it, because we got on very well in war, I took it away with me. I don't know what happened to it. Nothing happened in that particular case. I did another one where the daughters were Irish. They were daughters of a well-known and gallant British Army officer. And there you are, you see how you got this awful split. Of course, we ought to have given before the war started if they hadn't made it impossible, certain people. Lloyd George would certainly have got us to give Ireland home rule. You wouldn't have had any of this trouble.
How did you feel about the whole home rule? That sounds as if you supported the idea of home rule at the time.
I did, some form, but that had all passed, you see. There was somebody at school with me, charming boy, whose father was organising resistance in case this sort of thing should happen. And the whole of North Ireland, the Protestants were arming themselves and so on. But I mean, that is as it was.
Did you understand the politics of in 1920-21? Did you understand then on which side everybody was and what people were, what it was all about? Or did you only come to understand it later?
No, I knew all it was about. And of course, to take the other view, there you were with the war on. You got the famous attack on the post office and so on, with the rising, the Irish rising in the war. Just same as in the next war, though they were a republic, they denied us then the approaches, the Western approaches, you know, which meant that a hell of a lot of our ships and men were killed and so on. In other words, they were the enemy. So it's very difficult to sort yourself out on these questions, because that chance had passed. I don't know what would have happened in the politics. But I do know that General Gough, was one of the people who was very naughtily, openly supporting the Ulsterman, that idea. And whereas he ought to have been put under arrest. So,
you know, you say you were looking for information. What kind of information were you looking for? Had you been trained in this sort of work, or, you know?
Well, you and your troops had. Yes, you took your platoon. It was because those people were from above. Had said, we want you to raid these places because these are people who are causing the trouble. And in this tale where there was two charming daughters, pretty girls, who were the daughters of an army colonel or something like that, and the whole time I was looking around, they said, very daughterly, why don't you look under the carpet? Why don't you have the floor up? Why don't you do this, that and the other? So I said, it's all very funny to you, you know, but I said, this is a very serious matter, have people getting killed. And so we came to the famous day when you had the Bloody Sunday. Now, they talk about Bloody Sunday when the pears were a bit ripe in the latter days. With their guns, or we thought they were a bit quick. But in those days, it was a very different thing. What did they call the place where the army headquarters was? Dublin Castle. And those officers, a great many of them, lived in their places round about, in houses they rented or in hotels and so on. And in the early hours of the morning, when we were just thinking of coming home, we were raiding Inchicore railway sidings to try and find guns and ammunition. And the raiding boys of the Sinn Féin, we call them then, they weren't IRA, Sinn Féin in their uniforms, dirty Macintoshes, and a black Homburg hat, went to all these places, killed the officers, dragged them out of bed with their wives and families watching and so on. And, of course, we had to pull our married people in. Couldn't let them be out like that in future.
How many were killed, roughly?
I think about 20. And so there was an enormous project. So this is typical of the Irish, I said, in that study of the Irish people. They lined the route through Dublin, across the Liffey, down to the docks where I was I had to march alongside one of the vehicles with the dead bodies. And so we went down, and there were a crowd turned out, tens of thousands of people to watch there. And they kidded themselves, they were sympathetic. I think they were, in a way, in an Irish way. And when they were crossing the Liffey, at the back of the pavement, so to speak, were the black and tans, who were, most of them, to become Palestine policemen later. And if the Irishmen didn't take their hats off as the corpses went by, they seized them and threw them in the Liffey. And I think it was I forget which of the Irish papers it was next day, said the Liffey was black with headgear. Well, this is so, and the follow-up from that, before we go further, was that when they marched out, I was in Egypt by then, when they marched out, they lined the pavements again in their thousands. They said, come back again, dear. This is the Irish idea. And if you think of what was happening when one of the battalions had captured the nominal roles of the Inchicore Brigade of the Sinn Féin.
Was this after the Bloody Sunday or before?
The what?
Was it after the Bloody Sunday affair or before?
I can't remember. I think it was definitely after. And it was when we got back to barracks in the morning that we found that these people had been killed. It was very difficult. We had to restrain our troops from going out and seeking vengeance. But we managed to do it. And so, as I said, they had to bring everybody into barracks. We used to still go out to play other battalions at Rugger and hockey and so on. I used to represent the battalion too. And we had a Lewis gun at the back of the lorry we were in. And everything was very tight then. And I used to go out then. We were after the head of the intelligence of the Sinn Féin. And there was a very nice little ranker officer who was very keen on this, and I used to go with him. He was on his own on one occasion. He thought he'd got this fella when he was in the yard, and he heard a noise going on inside a door, and he opened it out, and out flew a lot of hens. Now, that wasn't very successful. Well, I went out, and this fellow again, he was with his sister, who was a gaunt, very fine type of Irish woman, always with a cigarette hanging out of her mouth, but she was very clever, and she married a professor in Trinity College, Dublin. I know you're saying we ought to go.
It's all right, carry on.
And so I got out there and actually burst into a bedroom where his cigarette was still lighted, half smoked, beside the bed. And when I went on a holiday, long after the war, round Ireland with my wife and our doctor and his wife, we met this woman and her professor husband at one of the places we were staying at. And she told me that she had been in the house when I raided it. And the last moment before I went in, she rushed into the bedroom and saw his gun was there. So she said, oh, what the hell I do with that? Because we were just coming in, you see. And she had a kettle boiling on the stove. And she thrust the gun in there, wondered every minute whether it was going off or what was going to happen. And she, this is so like the Irish, she was, when they, that fine fellow, Michael Collins, marvellous man, gave up his life because he was murdered by his own people. But he and Arthur Griffiths said, all right, we'll go and talk to the British and give them Ulster. You see? And so he was killed by his own fellow for that. And well, I couldn't help liking him. He wouldn't have done anything like Bloody Sunday or anything like that. In fact, on one occasion, when some battalion were raiding a house he was in, he was hanging for about half an hour, I don't know how he did it, to the windowsill outside. And so when this happened, and we packed up, we said, all right, you'll be a republic, we'll have Ulster. This good lady and her husband then broke off from the main body, De Valera and co, because they were, in other words, terrorists within the terrorists. And, so I had to go because I was posted.
Before we just come, how did you act? When you caught, found the nominal roles of the brigade or somebody and they were handed, how would you organise those raids? And
Well, we had six officers a night. And, with six houses for each of them to raid. We didn't always do. I had a most interesting raid. But they were all in Ship Street slums in Inchicore. These. And it was quite obvious that with these vast nominal rolls that they must have come from nearly every house there.
And how would you actually organise it? I mean, how many men would you have with you and how would you gain entrance and secure exits? And how did you...
There had been a case where a British officer who was actually trying to revenge his brother who was killed that way, he went down on his own to get entry into a house, and it was opened by a priest, the door, and he was shot by a Sinn Féiner over the priest's shoulder. And so then we always insisted on doing the thing. You took your house, you sent somebody, generally my sergeant, to the back, for anybody rushing out behind, you
with
see.
How many men, or just the sergeant?
No, a sergeant and Well, I'd have the whole platoon, but actually for the house, and it's around, just the sergeant and a couple of men. Well, as soon as you got inside, you rushed it, you see, that you got hold of the senior member of the family, in this case a good lady who was obviously so, and you said to her, now, will you get everybody together in one room of the family, which meant they were there with the farmyard on the beds and so on, Irish style, and I'll get you to come round with me then, to make certain that I don't destroy anything or make a nuisance of it. And in this particular case, we went round and we found the father of the family giggling on his pillow in another room surrounded by bottles. And it was a very friendly show. And when I said finally, well, now I'm going to take him back. The sons were on the run as usual. But I'm going to take him back to barracks where the prison's being full. We've got Nissen huts flaked out from the centre. And they're going to be very comfortable indeed. But I want you to take some really poor stuff with him, for underclothes and so on. And I took him back to barracks. And as I was leaving, Madam said, you'll stop and have a cup of tea before you go. And I said, no, I'm sorry, we'll just get back, but that'll be all right. And when I was spending Christmas in Lucan, the battalion were giving the prisoners a very good time, Christmas dinner and all the rest of it, and some entertainment. And the old man sent a special chit to the CO thanking him for everything that had been done. This is Ireland again, you see.
When you rushed the actual house, or a house, would you break down the door or just open it normally? How rough were you in the searches?
Well, if they'd open the door, you'd do it. Otherwise, you'd have to break it down somewhere.
Would they usually open it for you? Or?
Oh, yes.
And during the search, what were you actually looking for? Information, weapons?
Yes, weapons and information.
And how far would you
and
go?
And the things that you found in the drawers. Well, I couldn't tell you over this, but quite disgusting. Horrible. And I say, all this farmyard stuff in the house.
How far would you go? Because hiding things is quite... You can hide somewhere something in such a way that you can only break the thing.
Oh, no, nothing like that at all.
So you wouldn't
and
sort of...
You were only really looking for guns and things like that. And you wouldn't find any literature or anything like that worthwhile in these slum houses. There was, of course, those were the sort of things I was looking at in these individual... When the polite young officers was looking for damaging literature and so on.
Did they ever claim that you damaged something when you had... I mean, did they ever claim for damages?
No. No.
Did you ever find any terrorists or any guns or any...
I didn't in these cases because these were the... in the separate ones, I didn't when I was doing... where these girls were tormenting and so on. No, I never found anything. I didn't expect to, frankly. You'd obviously got to do it because what you were going for primarily was the young men who were members of the Sinn Féin, like IRA.
And they'd always left. They were always on the run.
They were up in the Northern Mountains somewhere.
Besides the Bloody Sunday thing you've already mentioned, what sort of activities were Sinn Féin doing at the time?
Well, you'll remember that in 1916 was the first revolt and the famous attack on the post office in order to quell the trouble. When the war ended, the trouble in Ireland didn't stop. You got these people undercover committing the same sort of atrocities as they do now in Ulster. And it covered the whole country then. Now, when I went out there, it was because British Army were out there in force trying to keep things down. That's how I came to be there and was closely involved with the undercover Sinn Féiners. In fact, one has rather amusing experiences apart from the difficult side of it, but things changed completely. We were able to go out among them and carry on with our ordinary guard duties and so on, until you got things like Bloody Sunday, when we had to bring all our married people in to the various barracks like us. And when you were talking about raiding, one of our battalions captured the nominal rolls of the Inchicore Brigade. This was very big. And that was why we were out night after night. Before that, we had been raiding when there was something suspicious to raid. And I had actually been given a job of raiding a house which was empty at the time, belonging to my old friend Captain Redmond, and I went over the top. But you see, all that sort of reasonable contact had disappeared then. And we were out. We were sent out. We were given 6 houses, mostly in the slum area, Ship Street area. Each officer was out doing 6 houses a night. And that's how I came to this period where one had some rather gloomy but rather amusing incidents, because the Irish have always got this, except what we call the Sinn Féin, the gunmen. And what you've got now out there, you never kill with the Irish, in my view. You'll never kill the IRA, you know. It'll always be causing blooming trouble until we get some arrangement out there.
Well, did you have any sympathy for the Sinn Féin, the politics of...
No, I had no sympathy at all. But not with them. I had sympathy with the Irish because it was a tragedy at the beginning of the war. The Home Rule Bill, it was dropped altogether. You got nothing but trouble and stupid people, people like Carson and Gough, the soldier, who were encouraging this resistance movement, you see. And so that was killed. Otherwise, with some arrangement of home rule for Ireland, you'd have not had any of this trouble now.